Hi, this is Natu, a guy who's way too old and way too long involved in this game, and you're watching Thorin's YouTube channel.
Right, this is going to be another episode of Reflections, and my guest for this one is going to be Quick, who is a really old school Counter-Strike professional. When I say old school, the problem with that is like old school in esports is always just a few years earlier. I mean, like literally the early 2000s. Like, all you need to know is I'm considered old, and I actually only started the year or two before Quick. And actually, in terms of playing, I think it was almost the same time period. So I have a quick question for you to start out the interview, actually, because one thing I like to do in my interviews is I don't want to just hit all the obvious topics. And I want to get into some things people maybe never knew about you, et cetera. So one thing I actually found out that surprised me, actually, Quick, was when I was looking up, I only knew you from when you came up, and this will be part of the story in a few minutes, obviously the whole Airlaget team and upsetting the big dogs and suddenly becoming relevant in Swedish Counter-Strike. But I actually saw when I was looking up, really going back in the archives, that you were actually playing with a bunch of famous players before this, right? You were with like the Too Easy Mix sort of group of people, right? Scream and Spawn and these people. What was the early period like? Were you actually playing with good players before you were in a top team yourself?
No, I mean, I only as friends, you know, I knew some of them, but my first like official team was, I think it was Allaget. That was with Queen, which was later at, with, Les Sols.
Yes.
So she was in that group together with some other Classic and some other players. They were sponsored by, Internet Cafe, that where I started, like where I had my first introduction to Counter-Strike. So I started playing at that with together with that team. And then Allaget came there to the Internet Cafe to recruit me after we had like, been performing a couple of, games. So Allaget was a little step like further from our arena, and then after Allaget was when I joined with the Esports United, and that was like when I stepped into the world arena. Before that was mainly, well, I mean, with Allaget we did manage to go to WSOP, sure, in Korea, but we were still, you know, we were not really like the world teams like Esports United. So that was my introduction when I started really with like one of the best players, you know, with Veslan and Swift and Executor and Notorious and what was Venom and like more top players. So that was when I stepped into that, to the field.
When you say that, like you were playing in a cafe, this is obviously like we're talking right in the Classic era of when that was what Swedish Counter-Strike was, right? It's actually people weren't playing at home necessarily. You went to the internet cafe. It was sort of a social thing, right?
Yeah, that was, I think, when did I start? I think I first got introduced 2000 and let me think, 2001? No, 2000 was when I first like was introduced to it. And I think I started playing with Arena like 2001, and 2002 was when I joined Esports United in the like late December, straight just after we went to the UCG. But I was also doing a tryout for SK at that time.
All right.
Like SK or Esports United, because Heaton contacted me and like, you know, that's also seen me play. We've been also doing skirmishes. But they were needing two players. And Esports United was only needing one player. So SK ended up bringing in two Danish players that was already coming from one team and were really tight players. So that was easier for them to bring in two guys who could already team up together. They didn't have to introduce two new different players. So I ended up going with Esports United.
Give me this story then, like the part that people might know, which is that if you were around back then, even though you went on to become a totally legit player, you were actually the only person from this Allaget team that became a real top pro after that. This really was a team where, this is back also, for fans who don't know, this is back in the prime of when Sweden is the number one country in Counter-Strike. Like if you look at a big world tournament, the top three positions might be like number one Sweden, like number two Sweden, number three NA or something. Like this used to be like by default. So as a result, when you have like the World Cyber Games qualifier in Sweden, in theory, that's the hardest qualifier in the world to win. And so your team wasn't even, it's not even that you were just like, you beat the top team. You weren't even like the top three, four team at that one. I remember I was actually at this qualifier, all the teams, basically everyone except SK, because as you say, SK had like a whole thing with the Executors. They didn't have the Swedish line. Everyone except SK. So there was obviously the team with Veslan that ended up recruiting you. There was the Matrix squad with very big name players. All these top teams were at this event. Game Online, I think, even took some players maybe or something. How did your team possibly win this event? And like, did you yourselves even think it was possible?
No, I don't think we were thinking it was possible when we entered into the tournament. But, you know, and even when we were like, when we were at the points, like at the final points of winning, we're like, are we winning? Like, is this happening? Okay. We're still like barely figuring out. But one thing is like, we were not maybe the highest skillest players or team, but we were extremely tight. Like, because we even spent a couple of months.
Oh, you're all super friends, right?
Yeah. And we were like, I think that reason why we won, I don't know if it was Matrix that we beat or Too Easy. I don't remember. It was not SK. No, it was Too Easy or.
I think it was Vesselin's team in the final. Or was it the Matrix team? Maybe. I'm not sure. One of the two.
I really don't remember like that qualifier. But it was mainly us. Like, just we were such a tight team, like playing. And it was. I think that was what made us win. You know, it was not because they were top players, many of them, but they were not as tightly knit as a team as we were, because we had to, because we didn't have the same like skill, you know, to meet them up. So we had to like just operate in a different way. And yeah, it's like, it was, we didn't think we were going to win it, but sometimes the underdog like just comes up and, you know, takes the game down.
Also, the other thing is, like I say, I'm not even being rude to any of the other players in the team. No one else went on to have like a big pro career. But the weird thing is, if people don't remember, there was actually a player in this match, your teammate Eske Olsen, who was having like the game of his whole life, wasn't he? He was like, I don't think people realize like this is a LAN match against like the best Swedish players. And this guy was like AWPing them and like fucking taking over the game against like people like Scream and Spawn and stuff like this. Is it must be very surreal to be in a game like that. I almost forgot the vibe, by the way, that the big name teams almost didn't believe it was real. They were all just sort of like, what's going on here? Like, oh, we're gonna win in a second, right? Like, I got the vibe even they didn't believe they were sort of losing to this team.
Did you watch the game? It's like, yeah, yeah. We'll be very up late newly, like recently.
No, I haven't rewatched it or anything. I just remember vividly how like the vibe in there. Yeah, that's all I'm famous for. Yeah, true.
Yeah, it's funny thing is actually I went and hanged out with Eskilsson yesterday. We had a seen each other for a year, but went in to have a dinner with him yesterday. So
okay,
so I'm gonna tell him about our interview.
Sure.
But yeah.
I've got a question, which is like this, which is normal. Like you said there, it was more like you had like the vibe of like you were all friends and it's not like you came in with the idea you were going to win. But what I want to know is this though, right? Sometimes before people become pros, the idea is like they already thought maybe I am actually good enough. Maybe I should have the chance yet or whatever. Or maybe like some people thought back then it's politics. You have to know the right person to get invited to the team. Did you actually always think you were a good player? Did you think you could play on the top, like the pro level when you were playing around this time period?
Yes. After 1 month of being introduced to Counter-Strike, I told my friends I'm going to be the best player in this game.
Okay.
Because I've always had the mentality, like I was competing in many different games, like in many different sports growing up, both basketball, hockey, football. You know, I wanted to compete in martial arts, but I had a lot of physical issues, like my knee or hurt my shoulder. So it was always something physical holding me back from really like advancing. And when I sat down in front of Counter-Strike and noticed there's nothing holding me back, it's like I can sit and play for 10-12 hours straight, and I'm just saw like the curve of development going so fast, and I felt like I'm gonna be best in this game. So I knew I had it in me, because it's a lot the mentality part, you know. And then I put in the, you know, it's not like I was the talented player that sat down first time I played and was super good, but I had a hunger, I had dedication, I put in the time, and I had the mentality, like a champion's mentality, which is also equally important. And very short in it, it's like I felt, you know, I was going to be really good. After I had friends who've been playing for a year at the Internet Cafe, after 1-2 months, I was fragging them all out. And, you know, I entered Arena team, and after a short time, I was already like feeling I had already surpassed them. Same thing with Alaget, already like at the being one of the, feeling like, okay, I'm really developing fast here. And that's why they, like both SK and Esports United, got their eyes up for me. And even like in interviews, you know, Beslan, when they asked him, like, who do you think is one of the best players in the world? You know, he spoke about me, because I had, and not saying like it's in football, you know, it's difficult to say who's the best player. It's Messi, sure. Ronaldo. It's like this many top players. So I never felt or thought like I am. But I knew I was definitely one of the top like five players in the world, because I had both the intelligence, I had the skill, and I had the teamwork, the strategy, and the reactions. You know, I was like, I was a smart player. not only skill, but I had many of the parts in it. And when I was at my top I was a sniper, and that was like the main thing. That's why they recruited me to all these teams, because they needed a really good sniper. And when I was at my top with sniping, I felt like I am the best sniper in the world. Like that was because it was proven over and over in the biggest tournament, meeting the best players. So I felt from very early, like this is going to be my game, because I had it in me. And I also had that, like, I needed to prove it, you know, because right. I haven't been able to with sports before.
Well, let's keep going on that topic then, because actually, like, I just have a good memory for demos and stuff, right? When you played, one of the things that would be interesting to people is, right, in the modern day, just because people eventually got so familiar with playing Counter-Strike, like, if you remember, years and years later, especially online, everyone would use the AWP, and everyone thought they could, like, AWP, because really what they mean is they were just failing it one game, and it was like the ping was just right to make it not too hard, and they got a few kills off on Dust Hill or something, you know. But to me, this is the difference. When you used to go to the LANs back in the era you're talking about, there used to be very little AWPing. Like, there would basically be one AWP per team, and even then, it's a really expensive gun and you don't have many rounds in the game. And if you're on, I always say to people this, here's the difference between online AWPing. When you online AWP, you do it for fun, it's just a meaningless game. When you're online, if you lose the pistol round and that fourth round comes and you buy the gun, the AWP, and you die, you just had four whole rounds where it feels like you've got nothing done. Like, that's why that's a really pressure weapon to me. So as a result, though, like you say, people who were really good with the AWP for were sort of, like, in English we say, like, worth their weight in gold. Like, they were really valuable. That's why people like, obviously, like Hib for the legendary NIP teams, Vestlin, like you say, like these are the players who were very famous, right? I remember in your style, not only were you using the AWP all the time that you could get it, but you were even someone who was quite good, like close range. You used to do the thing that I always thought was a very interesting style, which was you would also sometimes even like check corners while you were zoomed in, where some people, you know, zoom after they check the corner. What's that? Did you view yourself as like, I am just a sniper, like this is my weapon, I have to know everything about this weapon?
Yeah, I felt that, because since, like you say, it's such an important role to play in the team, because like you say, sometimes other players have to buy you the AWP because you're an important player, because one AWP can hold like half of the side of the map sometimes. So I definitely felt it was a big role to play. And I was also not only attacking AVP player also. So I went and challenged the many of the AWP players that were standing on their place, and I developed different type of techniques to be right. able to take them out and be more like close range also. But it came to a point after we came second place on CPL 2003. I felt I needed a shift, because now I've been playing like up for about two years, year and a half, because my career in Counter-Strike was very short. Like I started playing, and you know, within year and a half, I was from this time I started playing, I think year and a half later, I was a world champion with my team. And then I only played one more year and then I quit. So that's why, like, for many players that were not that present during that time, they might not know my name.
Sure.
Because it was such a short time in comparison to Heat and Spawn and Party. Many, like, they spent 4 or 5 years within the and then continued working.
Sure, yeah.
Teams. So I did a change after CPL and started using AK and Colt. So like I stepped out of the sniper part, but that also, it made me not the same peak performance that I used to have, because I was good still and I was a world player, but not like, you know, when I was sniper, I was feared. You know, it's like, you know, I knew that was like I was a difficult player to take on. You know, it's like wherever I was, it was like it's gonna be hard to take me out, because I was both fast and I used to spend hours, especially before tournaments, hours just putting out as many bots that I could, and then just practice with quick zoom, you know, I'll be holding him like just moving around. It's like, so I knew that had to be fully automated. If I'm looking here and someone comes up there, it's like I have to be able to with millisecond just move that dot, move the dot, and like take those people out. So it's like I spent so many hours just out. I was one of the players who practiced most in the team, because I had that dedication, you know. It's like, really, I want to be super tight when a tournament comes on.
Also, the other thing is, as well, there were AWPers back then where maybe like they're known for their skill with the AWP, but some of those guys just get to play sort of on their own, like they're on this side of the map and everyone does something over here. If you play in a Veselin team, like that, Veselin's whole thing and Executor and Veselin are all about tactical Counter-Strike. Those are the nerds who just are on like a chalkboard figuring out the things. Well, that's like, it's, the joke is that's what they like to do. It really is. Like they love to get in a demo and go for, right? If you play as an AWP for those guys, they must have like very strict expectations about what they want you to do and how you want you to play and set up the game around what you're going to do, right?
Yeah, both. I mean, maybe in the beginning, but I as very short, because it was actually through Swift. I knew Swift from before, because
right,
we grew up in similar play. So he was definitely a part also of like helping me get into that team. But it was Veselin who wanted me in, and Executor came later because he was still playing, I think,
Illithic,
exactly. Yes. And he came on afterwards. You know, it was amazing to have two tactical players like Veselin and Executor. It's like definitely a lot of tactics to learn. But I was already quite early. Like when I was playing with Arena, I was doing tactics.
Right. So
when I entered, it was me and Veselin who was managing a lot of the team. And
he
came up with a lot of the tactics, but it was co-created also. He bounced it with us and with me. And so I had already a very tactical mind. So it was not so much like, of course, you know, I was still a player. If they say like, okay, this is the tactics, maybe we talk about it. But then it was a lot of trust. You know, it's like, I mean, Veselin trusted me to 100% when it comes to like execute it in a good way and not micromanage my play in that way. So it was a lot of trust in the ability for me to be a tactical player at the same time. And when Executor came in, you know, it's like I was just some strong tactical team. You know, it's like everybody had a good mind for that type of thinking. So
I think that might even be something that old school fans might not know, is that like they know, for example, like for Norwegians, Danish players, some of these players focus more on tactics side, but actually a lot of Swedish players, it's actually even famous to this day in Swedish Counter-Strike, they prefer to play what you call like default Counter-Strike. Like you just play simple Counter-Strike, basically, and you let the skill of the players decide how you win the round or what you do. And it's a bit more individualistic, right? So one thing I would ask is this, I always thought like Veselin actually went a little bit against the grain in Sweden. Like I didn't get the vibe that the Heaton and Potty teams were like super in depth like that. They were more like they had amazing players, and it seemed like they sort of played a bit like, I don't know, Real Madrid in football. You play a bit open, you know, you try and outscore the opponent, is the analogy I would use. You know, what was it actually like in this regard? Because it felt like in your team they really did take like almost a sports approach of like, we're going to be pros, right? We're not just good at the game, we're professionals.
Yeah, definitely. Veselin, he had a great mind. I mean, it was definitely a good strategic mind. It was intelligent, brother. You know, you could tell that he went a lot into the strategic and thinking about like, okay, if this happened, that happened. And so it was, he definitely like made a lot of our team like be really also successful, that we had like detailed, you know, like, and it was not only because of him, because we were, you know, many of us were smart players. So we all contributed. When we went through a tactic, we all contributed with ideas to it. But it was like such a tight, you know, it's like, okay, this flash comes there at that second, then this flash comes there, and then this, then that. So it was very detailed in how we executed it. But normally that's just the first initiation, like the first, when you do the first attack. Then after that, it's up for grabs a little, you know, depends on what happens. Did they take two out of our players out? Then we have to know like, okay, now the next strategy to execute and how we're going to do that has to be a lot like speaking together. Okay, let's do it like this. You throw this and I do that. And then boom. So we all had to like had a very strong strategic mind. But I felt like we, you know, because SK with Heat and Potty, and they had Element, and they had, I don't remember all the players at that time, but they had like really high skill spawn.
For sure.
Like
yes.
High skill players that they could send out one and, you know, do their thing. So they definitely used that type of play style more than we had, because I felt like we were all skilled players, but, you know, different abilities, I feel. We had to rely also, like, I feel SK, they had, it was just a little some of the players like spawn, you know, it's like super, super ultra skillful. So it's like we have to play a little different in that state. But we were still like one-on-one, you know, it's in every, and that we could see. And like it's always like 50-50 who's going to win. But they had a lot of experience also. You know, it's like Veselin, Potty and Heaton had been playing, like they were playing tournaments in CPL.
Oh, the beginning, yeah, absolutely. Started,
you know, yes, like yes. 99, like before I was introduced, they were already competing on the highest level. And I was not a computer game guy. I never owned a computer. I didn't even know how to freaking put in the cables to be able to you know, to play when I started. So yeah, we had to definitely use different abilities.
Right. You know, that's actually an angle I even sometimes wonder. You know, when everyone asks that classic question that was, always, especially when Sweden was at the best in Counter-Strike, was always like, why is Sweden so good at esports games? And people always have all these reasons that I always think are sort of like, they're side reasons at best. Like things like, you know, like they have a good welfare system there, so you don't have to always get a job. It's like, maybe. But like, I actually think along the in line of your story, by the way, a common story I've heard from a lot of Swedish pros is actually the idea that they weren't all just nerds. Gamers, they were actually people often. In fact, that story you've said, that basically some version of a story of I was a sportsman who got injured, and while I was injured, I played Counter-Strike in the meantime because everyone was doing it, and then I just started playing Counter-Strike and just, you know, I kept playing that. There's tons of stories that I get the vibe part of what must make like Sweden / Scandinavia successful is people, like, it's in that scenario, if you think about the analogy, the person isn't playing just because they're good at the game. They're sort of taking the mindset that would have tried to excel in sport, and they're putting it into, in this case, video games, like a virtual sport. And that sense, like, it seems like a lot, there's a much more like active culture in Scandinavia, right?
Yeah, for sure. And many of us, like, there, I could say, so first, there's many of us who already, like, I was working as a bouncer as a popular nightclub when I became a world champion. So it's like I had a different type of life also. So it's like you also bring in a different type of mentality, like a different type of personality into the game. And I think when it comes to why Sweden was very successful, there is multiple factors. I think one, we had extremely good internet, very early.
Sure,
yeah. And that helps. We had home computers, like many people had home computers very early. And thirdly, there's probably more reason, but like the last one that I would say is like, since we maybe had these things early, that made teams be, that we had good teams quite early in the scene, which makes other teams be able to practice against the best team. It's like if you have in Sweden, if you have 4 to 5 really good teams, then any team that is striving to get better, they are practicing against these better teams so they can develop faster. That's why we had so many good teams in Sweden, because we were playing against each other. So it's like we developed faster in maybe in France, there was only maybe 1 or 2 good teams. So this gets more difficult for them to develop because they don't have the same challenges in their practice as we had, you know, practicing against SK and other great, or some Norwegian teams, you know. It's like we are, every practice game is high level skill game. So it makes you become better faster.
I want to ask you about some specific tournaments. So we'll see if you can remember things around it or something, the storyline in any way. So one thing, just before we move off the topic, since we started the story when you're in the Arlaget team and you're upset for the World Cyber Games qualifier, what about the actual World Cyber Games in Korea then? Because what I'll say is this, it is true, you were actually in one of the harder groups because you had Team 3D and you had the Canadian team, which was like, they'd actually won the previous World Cyber Games. So some of those players were experienced, et cetera. Right, your team obviously didn't do well at this event. Like we've said, you weren't like a top professional team. It was a miracle you won the qualifier. But my question is this, right? I remember hearing at the time, it might have been from like Infinity or Softcore or one of those guys, they sort of implied to me that because the team knew you weren't going to win the World Cyber Games, that people just sort of took it as a holiday and they went there, you played the matches, but aside from that, people were like, maybe they drank a little bit too much and they were partying or something. Is any of this true? Did people sort of take it more less seriously because they knew they weren't going to win?
No, I mean, we were thinking, we were still went to the Cyber Games. Like if we won against, I mean, which team was it? Was it too easy? I don't know. Like,
I think you beat all of them. I actually think you beat like Vestas State and the too easy.
When we won the qualifier, because we won the qualifier against the team that was supposed to go. Like, you know, like
it might have been too easy then. Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. So we came there thinking like, man, maybe we have some potential. You know, it's like, okay, these are better teams, but we already beat one team that is better.
Sure.
And we knew we had a really good strategies. We had a good team play. So we definitely had the mentality that we could go far in it. But the problem with Arlaget at that time is that all the players in the team did not perform on their highest
at
the time. It's like there was we were maybe 3 players out of 5 who had a good, like, you know, standard of each game you perform, like a high, low level. Even if you are playing bad, you're still good. Meanwhile, but we had two players who were more stable. So they, that's one of the reasons, like, it was, we're not stable as a team in that way. But some of us still like did a good work, you know, but it takes five in this,
sure,
especially to go further. So we also, you know, it's like, it's in countries, like sometimes you make one mistake and that fucks up the whole thing, you know, and then like 3, 4, 5, 6 rounds and then you lose the momentum. And we could also see in certain, some of the games, it was like sometimes small details who could shift it. So it's like, it was, I think even against 3D, where it's like, it was not like they were like, you know, taking us out super easy. It was like things that we messed up because we might not have been as, you know, performing high on each game as individual players. So that was one thing that that I think like made it, because if everybody in the team would have performed at the highest, we could have definitely gone more further, because we had a really good strategies and good team play. So it was just about the individual skill in that, you know, that beats down, and small mistakes that can just mess it up. And then how the mentality affects, like if you do a couple of mistakes, and then like, how can you lift yourself back up in the game and not like, okay, this, we lost that, it's fucked, you know?
What was the vibe like though when you left? Like, did people get that? Like, look, this is obviously an amazing opportunity. Like, I have to take an offer if I get it. Like, cause if this is a friend's team, you know, on some level, people might be like, why not just stay with us?
Yeah. Do you mean Alagut?
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it was also about the competition. I didn't know Alagut before
right.
I joined them. Okay. They came and recruited me, as I said, in Arena. So it was like we became friends, but I was in it for the competition,
right?
Not to be best friends and just stay in a team. But I know they got disappointed. And I was already talking with the Esports United when we were in Korea, because Veslan and me was having, he started like to write me as I was in Korea, and I was already, and I had already done practice games with SK at that time.
Right.
And they found out. So they felt I went a little behind their backs. But for me, it was like, I needed to see what, okay, it's like, of course I want to play with the SK or Esports United. SK was like top, both of them were top three in the world at that
time. I mean, like, if you're a Swedish player, the dream is the idea you go on the internet and suddenly Veslan and like Heaton and that are messaging you, like, hey, join my team. No, join my team. Like, that's the dream, right?
So, you know, and so of course, sure. You know, but I could have managed it better. You know, I could have been like, okay, guys, you know, this is what's happening. Instead of like, I didn't say, and I was like feeling in, because I didn't want to say anything before I knew. And I didn't want to affect the team morale during the tournament, but they actually found out anyway. So,
okay.
It was like, not the best, you know.
Sure, of course. It makes it feel a bit slimy, sure, I get it.
Yeah, I know. It's like...
Right, another event I want to ask him about. I've got a different take on this completely. So people might know the first part of this story, and they might think, actually, that I'm just going to bring up the classic anecdote, and it's like a dunk, but it isn't. Because if people don't know, I love Veslan. I'm still mates with him now. I've met him the last few years again. By the way, I'm sure you've met him again. He's exactly the same person as well. The joke is now, though, instead of tactics, it's like business is his shit now. Like, it's the same way. Like, he's planning everything, and I was going to beat everyone 10 steps ahead. And doing all this stuff here. So anyway, right, basically the question goes like this: when you come to join this team, one of the first big events when you're in the Esports United team was you went to CPL Cannes in south of France, and this is the event where people remember your team came second to SK, which wasn't like the proper SK with Element, but it was still a good Swedish lineup. And this was the one where, like I say, people are going to think this is the funny part, because the first part of the story is before the final, when they played on Nuke, Veslan, there's a famous anecdote where he said something like, he tried to do like a movie speech, and he was like, you know, in Swedish, he said like, we're the best in the world and we're going to make history, right? And the reason everyone remembers it is because sadly, it's almost like a comedy scene, because right afterwards, your team just lost by the Mac. He went like 0-12 in the game and your team got crushed in the match, right? So everyone remembers that. And sadly, they all remember it like sort of like what an idiot he was making that, you know, he looked silly basically. But actually, what I want to ask about this is, one, yes, obviously that is funny. Like, I'll even say that as his friend. Like, that is funny if you say we're going to make history and then you get 0 kills in the game. But the more important thing I want to ask was this. Like, I actually, you know, I interpret that differently, mate, because I actually think that actually shows what Veslan was like as a leader. Because remember, these are just video games. At the end of the day, people could just have a very nonchalant attitude and just be like, you know, play your best, guys. Who cares? Like, we'll see. Like, he actually did almost, even though back then it was just a very niche hobby, he almost could see it back then like it was a movie. He was trying to make like epic moments, right?
Yeah. And when it comes to like one thing, when it comes to that specific tournament, and also when it comes to Veszlin, it's like Veszlin used to play with
sure.
Nick, right? So he used to be a teammate with Potty and Heaton. So one thing that we felt as a team, there was always something when we played against SK comparison to any other team, there was something that was like not 100% with Veszlin.
Okay.
Something mental that he like of some blockage or tension that made his as a captain and like calling the strategies was something that got blocked almost every game against.
I know from knowing him, he was definitely very, very eager to beat them. Like, as you say, he wanted to sort of show, like, you shouldn't be kicking me out of the team or I'm better than you got. Yeah, he definitely was super eager to show that. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was something there that every time we met them, there was like, we felt that at Veszlin, like, was not at his highest, neither as a player or as a captain. So there was something there, and there was in their dynamic because none of us had it. Like there was
right.
no or any relationship with them in that sense, but he had. And, you know, I don't know what happened. I don't remember what happened to their team, if he got kicked out or something, but they were not really good friends, you know. So it was something there that made it difficult to beat SK. And then that specific tournament also after SK, after CPL Cannes, we also asked Venom to leave. And Venom was
yes.
a highly skilled player.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
But he didn't have the right mentality. And I was one of the reasons to take him out of the team, because after we lost the game in the final against SK, he said like, yeah, I felt we were going to lose.
Yes, I remember the story.
And I remember yeah. that point. It's like, that's not the champion mentality that yes. we cannot be world. We cannot be the best games and thinking that we're going to lose before we enter the game, because then you already lost. It's like that's common knowledge in sports psychology. You know, it's like if you enter, it's like you're gonna fight the best fighter in the world, and you're thinking I'm gonna lose. There is no way you're gonna ever win. So that he had to go, and it was after that we refined the team and like brought in and had the right mentality. And short after that, we became world champions.
Sure. But actually, along those lines, because as you say, the interesting thing about this time period was like actually the team gradually changed. And by the summer, it got like the real lineup that people know. So some of the players who were brought in, this might be another thing people might not know, is in this era, as you say, if you look at like an SK team at the time, they're all like the best players. It's like Spawn and fucking the greatest players ever. And some of the players in your team are very good. But I remember at this time, this is why that story is actually relevant you brought up about Venom. Because if people don't know, players like Venom Notorious, these are like some of the most veteran, like top pros who've been just at the top for years and years, but actually the team went an opposite direction and basically went and got these players, Lucchese, Luciano, who were actually like, these are up and coming players. Like these are players who hadn't made it yet. So I got the vibe here. That's part of what it was about, right? It was about like, let's get, you know what, if some of these old pros are sort of like, they've just set in their ways or maybe they're just fine being second best. Let's get some young guys there. Let's get some people who are hungry and we'll shape them into players. Like, because these players before they joined your team, they weren't like considered the top players. Like no one was super recruiting these guys. Like, yeah, someone like Lucchese became really good later, but these are kind of gamble pickups, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think it was because we were skirmishing them, and like they were Cosa Nostra, I think, Gothenburg like team, and I think both like through practice set games and looking at them, it's like both of them were like standing out. So I think I don't remember exactly how the recruitment went, but it was after we asked Venom to leave, and Swift also, he had to also,
yes.
he was not like performing at his highest neither. So I think both Venom and Swift made space for Lucchese and Luciano, because they, you know, we brought them in for some practice games, and they show what that like that they could hold that. And yeah, that was it. It was me. Who was it? It was me, Veszlin. It was Lucchese, Luciano. And who was the fifth player?
Ooh, let me think on that one.
It was not Notorious. It was not Venom.
Let me double check.
It was Executor, right?
It was later, I know, but was it initially? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, it was Executor in eSport.
It was Executor. Yes, that was the fifth one.
Yeah,
right.
Yes,
right.
That was after we went to a tournament in France that we
after won. Click Arena. Yes.
Arena.
By the way, I was going to ask about that, because here's the thing. Before we get to like the real tournaments, sadly, one of the first tournaments you won was essentially like a fake tournament now. Because even though it happened, by the way, guys, we all went there. The matches happened. They did happen like late at night and stuff. But at the end, it's the one where they never sent the prize money in. And now it's sadly remembered as like a really notoriously bad event. And it was terrible at the time. But at the same time, when you're in the match, like you still think I'm winning a match. Like I'm beating Eolithic. I'm beating the best teams in the world, right?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that was a bummer, that tournament, you know. But it was good because, you know, it gave us since we won that, and as that was all the best player teams were there, so it gave us, I think, also the confidence for to step forward for the next tournament. And shortly after Click Arena was when Executor joined our team. So then, like, it was, I mean, with that team, if we would have continued. So what happened after we won Esports World Cup, and we went shortly after, like a month, and we became second place after SK in CPL summer.
Yes.
But like it was a tight, we felt like we are definitely on very...
Yeah, these games were all close. It was like, yeah, as you say, like, put it this way, if people don't know, ESWC didn't play SK directly, but they were at the tournament. You still won the tournament. They didn't reach the match to play you. And then, yeah, the CPL summer, like, these are close matches. Like, you can go back and watch. These are two teams that both could win.
Yeah. But what happened after that is that Luciano, he got in, he had applied to a designer school in Italy.
Okay.
And he got in. So after that,
That's why the roster move happened, right? I see.
Yeah, then right. And everything, because we were like at that point, like, if we continue on now.
You wish you could keep that 5-man lineup.
Oh, man, we were so tight, so good. Like, it right. was, the flow was perfect. You know, we felt not unbeatable, but like we're top of the game in that way. But then he left, and then we got the sponsorship from Sennheiser and we went for a boot camp for 3 months in LA. But Luches was still in school, so he couldn't come.
Right.
That's when we, like, the rooster changed, right?
Sure.
Me, Veslan, and Executor, and we brought in Notorious, we brought him out from the military. He was doing his military service. Had to send, like, papers and shit to the military to get him to come to LA. And then we also brought in Brunk
yes.
from old Ildith, old Too Easy.
Yes.
And he also played with SK. So.
Yeah.
But we were, that was, you know, it was not the same magic. Like, we had magic with it, with that five with Luches and Luciano, Executor, me and Veslan. That was magical energy. Like, we were so good together. So I wish that we would have gotten some more time to play with that, because then those three, you know, we spent 3 months in LA preparing for a big turn. It was going to be the biggest tournament in
LA. CyberX Games, another fake one, sadly.
1 million in prize money.
Tell you what, bear in mind, as you say, your pro career was like a year and a half long. Like, you were unlucky with the year you picked. Like, you had the two most fake tournaments of all time.
That's true.
But I've got a question then. What about this? As you say, obviously a big game changer to make the team go to the top was Executor joining. Again, if I go behind, like I said before, like, if you're a Swedish player, your dream is one day, you know, Veslan and Heaton are like, no, join my team, no, join my team. And then later it's like, oh, Executor, like, I'm going to join now. Like, these are like, this is like fantasy stuff if you're a player back then. Like, who was Executor as a player? Because if people don't know, like, he was a really old school player as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was a freaking magician. He was extremely good strat. Like, he was the captain in teams. He was really good with strategies, extremely good with all the weapons, and he was smart. So he was like, he was definitely one of the top players in the world. It was such a huge, like, thing to get him. But he came after we won Click Arena. So we already proved ourselves. That's why he joined.
Ah, right.
It's like, we already, you know, we came first, and it was like, okay, you know, this team is good. Sure. My team doesn't look that great. So I'll join these guys. So, but with him, when he entered and that was it. You know, that was the perfect match for our team. But then later also it was so funny. It was just a short time we had that magic, you know. But that entire year was good, though, because we came in each tournament, any tournament that we did, either we came first or second. And SK came first or third each of these big tournaments. So we were, like, competing
each tournament
during that year. It was just SK and our team. We were Adrenaline by this time. Team 9. And then we became Adrenaline.
Yes. By the way, though, one thing when you talk about Executor, though, like, this is another thing that is key to winning, though, that fans maybe don't get, is the key thing about people like Executor and Veslan, especially because they were always at the top of the scene, is they have the winner's mentality, like you're talking about. Like, here's the difference. A normal pro player, like, if they come second at a tournament, like, hey, that's pretty good. You know, we almost won. Like, no, players like this, if they come second, that's a bad tournament. You know, like, they'll be depressed. They're really, like, they really have that mindset, right? You have to be the champion.
Yeah, that's what, like, me, when me, Veslan, and Executor, because I had the same, I've always been extremely, still are, now, no, not the same, because I'm not competing anything, but always had that. So, like, us three in the team, and all of us also were quite mature, Like we were no kids, you know, in that way. So we also had, it was a level of maturity, it was a level of confidence, and then like the highly competitive mindset. So that was a powerful triad.
When you look back now, as you say, like you maybe could have joined SK, they were the main rivals. Like, what did you actually ever feel like when you played yourself? Did you ever want to be in their team? Did you ever think you could have beaten them in one of these big matches? Was there ever one that stands out like we should have got that one?
Yeah, there was definitely a few games where it's like, oh man, how could we make this mistake? Come on, guys. So it's like we were definitely equal in many different ways. You know, even they had some high skilled players, but we had other things that was balancing it. So it was many games like we were like, oh, you know, how could we do this simple little mistake? And now we lost that. And it was sometimes small mistakes in clutch rounds that especially when we have two teams that are almost equally good, you know, it's a coin flip in certain situations. And I was definitely, I've thought many multiple times, man, how we would have been to play with SK. I don't regret it because I felt like we had a lot of heart and a lot of good friendship. And, you know, I feel when I looked at how SK was and how they were with each other, it was a different energy. I wouldn't have been happy in that team in that way, even though they were like, you know, such a skilled player.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, part like just the playing part, I would have loved to be also part of their team. But everything around it, since you spend a lot of time, you know, socializing as a team, it's like, I don't think I would have been as happy.
Yes,
I was with me and Luciano became extremely good friends, and me and Bastian was also tight and Executor good friends. You know, when he came to Sweden to stay for the practice, like for the preparing for big tournaments, he stayed at my place. So we're all like developed a nice like brotherhood, you know, in the team.
No, the way you describe it, I think it makes more sense that you're on this team because, like you say, like basically people don't know the SK team was actually more like a, like almost like a professional football team. It's like people were in the team to win and get the prize money, but they were more sort of like a bit more like mercenaries, you know, they weren't like best friends or anything. Like maybe Heaton and Potty were, but like a lot of the other ones, like in fact, they were the team that notoriously were pretty ruthless cutting people. Like that, it was more just about success in that team. Whereas, yeah, in your team, like you say, it was about success, but also there was a vibe of sort of like we're on a mission and we're trying to beat SK together and we're all doing it with this tactical style. Like it seems like it fulfilled more of the other part of your personality, right?
Yeah, we had a lot of likable guys. You know, it's like people liked our players because we had personality. We had heart. You know, we were likable people. You know, not only players. You know?
So. One player I want to ask about actually is Lucchese, because I remember this, like I said, before this, I used to watch like a lot of the demos of the players and stuff. These weren't players that everyone was like, you've got to get this guy, like he's the next best. But when he was in your team, I remember one point in time, Vesta telling me, like, he's probably the best player in the world. Like, just look at this guy, just take over the whole tournament.
Yeah, Lucchese, like skill-wise, he was quite silent player. He was not like the leader type or anything, but he has some serious skills, man. Some serious skills, like when it comes to fragging, like similar, you know, similar to Spawn. He was not the leader, the strategist, but like just high level skill. So it's like when it comes to that part, he was definitely like one of the best players. Because it's in the end, it's like depending on which variables you put in, like when it comes to be like a really good player, like the more parts that you have, if you're a good strategist, if you're a good team player, if you're good, like with a different type of weapons, like. But Lucchese was definitely a big force in the team also when it comes to the frag part.
The other thing about your squad, and part of the reason why, like you say, it didn't last that long in the team, is also because you had this whole period where everyone went to America and you were there. Then afterwards, there was the thing where like Vesslin started to step back and then the team was like transitioning. And then initially there was a whole thing with sponsors, like, is it going to continue and become a different team? And then eventually it sort of just wrapped up. But what I want to ask was this, like, it seems like the way it ended, even though it like gradually died out, because it was not that long a period of time, we're talking like only like 3 or 4 months that this sort of wound down. It still feels a bit sudden, because like you went from basically being on like a team with like big salaries, like sponsorship, we're going to all the best tournaments, we're boot camping in LA, to like it's over and I just go and work somewhere else in the industry. It seems a bit sudden the way you ended your career.
Yeah, for sure, because it was after, you know, we went and was disappointed about the whole CyberX Games that didn't happen, and then we only came fourth for the CPL Winter. So also like disappointment. I didn't feel like we had the team that I really wanted to have. And then we went for the next esports World Cup. and only came like 9th to 12th or something like that. And at the same time, Sennheiser, who was saying that they were going to continue sponsoring this, they didn't complete that sponsoring. So it was the point of like, I was at the point where I'm like, okay, we have to find new sponsors and like build up a new team. And I was already like 23 something. When was this? 2004, right? When I quit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was 24, you know? So I was feeling like I'm a mature man, like in a way. I had a big social life, working as a bouncer. I was not a computer nerd. And I was seeing like the business was still quite immature. The players were immature. Not specifically in our team, but like when you look at the players,
for sure. Recruits,
you know, it's like I'm a 24-year-old man who has been like doing a lot of things outside of I was not a computer nerd in that sense, even though I was definitely nerd in the game. But I felt like the scene was still immature. The tournaments was obviously very still immature.
Oh, of course.
The sponsors were still quite immature, like the whole scene. So I felt at that point, just like, do I have the energy to build up a new team? Because now Vestan has stepped back. So I was now like team captain, even not specifically the in-game captain, but I was like now responsible for the team. And I felt like, do I have the energy to try to start build this up? And also at the same time, for what? To prove myself that I can be best again. I'd already like won. We already felt like I've already proved I was the world champion. I already felt like I was one of the best, showed that what I could do in this game. And I didn't feel I had the energy for it. It's like, man, it's like, this is not, the scene is not serious enough yet.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's when I like 2004 after Esports World Cup, I was like, I'm stepping down also. And I don't fully remember what happened after that. But I did do a comeback with Noah later for Korea. But
You went to one of the WEG tournaments with them. Yeah, shows a standing, right? Yeah.
Yeah, with WCG or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an executor who called me in for the next year, 2005, I think. Because I was in between and I was working with QPAD, Logic,
right.
Sennheiser, traveling around. People could like play 1-1 versus,
sure, yeah,
win tournaments. But then executor called me up and he was like, Fisker, who was going to be their fifth player, he ended up not going to them. So they were like in Korea with one man short. And executor knew like what, you know, he's like, he knew my capacity. I hadn't been competing anything for the whole year, but I had been playing some still Counter-Strike at like internet cafes. So it's like still maintain some. But I came there to, and they were number one in the world. They won like, I don't know, all the tournaments or something, sure, like that. And with the Method and the Shaguar.
Yes, thing. Yes.
And then it was executor and one more. Don't remember. But I came there and they did not, especially Method and Shaguar, were not practicing so much outside of our practice.
Right.
Because what I saw that they were, and this is what I also felt like with a scene being young in that way, and like in some places immature. It's like here they are at this big tournament, like, and they're not putting in the time. Outside of our practice games, they were playing World of Warcraft or like Warcraft or other games. Meanwhile, I was sitting every waking hour and practicing because I was, of course, I was a little behind. But I felt like these guys, we still have a chance to win. You brought in a good player like me, and I ended up like being the top fragger in I think one or two of the games. So that says a lot, like me not being playing in any tournaments,
sure,
for a year. But I was still like, I was so dedicated. I came there for, we only were in the tournament for the week because we lost two games and then we were out. And this is a lot because some of the players in the team had gotten a little too big head. Like we so good, we don't have to practice. It's like you might be, but you have a new player. You have a new team. We need to play to be able to win as a team. So that was what I saw why we didn't like succeed in that tournament. It was not specifically because I was not skilled enough. It was not because it was because we as a team, we did not practice enough because they were thinking, yeah, I don't know what they were thinking.
Makes sense. One thing I want to ask was a little bit before that, when you went with the, if we rewind again to 2003, when the team went to North America, when you got the sponsorship from the Gamers X Cafe and all that stuff and became Adrenaline. And as you say, the lineup had to change because Luciano had to go back to Italy or whatever, to this school, right? When you made this lineup, like, this is another factor that now, it won't sound like that big a deal now, but back then teams don't move regions in CS 1.6. Like, the idea, like, is a mainly Scandinavian team moves to LA and just lives there for months and months, like you said, to practice for these two tournaments, CyberX Games, which was supposed to have like $100,000 for first or something, and then CPL was like a week before or something, which is like also big money, etc. So like, I can get why you did it, but what I want to ask was this: it sounds like that ended up not really working out the way it should have, right? Because the idea, I remember, again, I was friends with Eslam, was like, right, we go there months in advance, so we get all this extra practicing, we all live together, so it's like we're practicing every day, every week, like we're gonna have facilities, like we're practicing against all the best teams. But as you say, like, in the end you came fourth in the event, like that lineup wasn't quite as good. What was the experience like in general in LA? Like, on one hand, I imagine you probably enjoy living in LA, right? Sounds like a cool place to go and check out for the first time. So what were the good and the bad of the experience like?
The good part was, like, we're feeling we were really professional players. We were paid salary, we had a paid apartment, we had a car. We had practice hours Monday to Friday, 4 p.m. to 10 or something like that p.m. So, like, it was very structured. Felt like, you know, we were taken care of. We're professional players. And this was back in the days, right? It's like we're one of the few teams that had salary.
Sure.
So it was really nice in that sense, you know. And we went out to a couple of clubs in L.A., like, you know, had a different experience, feeling it was a serious thing. And the guy who was sponsoring our team at that time was, or the guy who was owning the internet cafe and like being a sort of manager, he was a multimillionaire. So we felt also like we had a good team behind us. Sennheiser, I think, sponsored like $50,000 for us to go there. So it was like, I felt it was a big, serious like thing for us. The bad thing was that we would not have the team that we wanted to have. It's like we didn't have Luches or Luciano. So we were almost half the team. So it's like we had to build it up with Brunk and Notorious. That Notorious, we hadn't been playing like barely. I think he quit like when I entered Esports United. And so we, yeah.
By the way, that also just shows you that Vesson's like a different type of character back then. Because this is the era back then when you just recruit whoever's available at the time. Like, you look at the active players and you get the best guy you can. I remember this story of him telling me, I'm going to get Notorious. I was like, he hasn't even played for about 2 years. Because this is just who Vesson is. He was just like, look, when you, like, he had some philosophy, like, when you've been really good, you could always get back there again. So he had like some Vesson theory on how, you know, you could like rise back up. And he wasn't wrong, by the way. He was a very good player again once he got, got his hours back under him, because he was another all-round player, right?
For sure. I mean, Notorious, he was Notorious.
And definitely a LAN player.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, and he had already been in big tournaments, you know, because it's a lot also about not just being a good player, but like what really defines the good teams is like to be able to be able to perform when you come to the big tournament.
For sure. Yes.
There, and when the nerves kicks in.
Yes.
And when you have the clutch rounds and when you come into the finals, it's like it's so much mentality, and he had a good mentality. Because that's what I could see. Many teams had highly skilled players,
yes,
but could not perform when it came to tournaments because of the nerves.
Yes.
That's in the end what does define a lot, like when it comes to championship. It's not always the skill that wins, it's the nerves. It's the,
yes.
Yeah.
If people don't know, like, even though eventually a lot of the players became very good from this team, the original team for that was that team Matrix, because they used to play from the Matrix Cafe with the super low ping. And if it was on the internet, if they were scrimming you, they could beat everyone in the world. They could beat SK, they could beat everyone. But the problem is, if you took them to the LAN, they'd come like second or last place. It wasn't that they were bad players. They were amazing players, as you can imagine. But like you're saying, the key thing back in this era, especially because you don't get to go to a tournament every month, like a tournament's every 3 months, say, you have to be able to perform when you get to that tournament. Like, it's like you say, it's all well and good having good aim. Like, you better actually, like the equivalent of if it's football, you better score a goal. You better win the match. Yeah. That's what being a pro is about. Yeah.
Exactly. Especially when you're like, how do you turn when you're many rounds under? Or when you're 2 versus 4 in a round, it's like, how do you turn things? Because that happens to all teams. Like, you have to turn, be able to turn it and not feel like, oh, we lost it. You know, it's like how when you're 1 versus 2 versus 3 and it's only about you, how you can manage to really like to still play at your best and keep your nerves intact and you know, turn the tides. So it's like the Matrix players, they were still quite young. They were immature, most of them, and you know, they didn't have the mental strength for winning a world champion or becoming the best in that way.
By the way, I mean, I don't know how much you remember of your own career, but I wouldn't have even said from what I can remember. I always thought you were quite a clutch player, actually. I mean, AWPers typically aren't so famous for being in like the 1v1 situation. But again, like I say, you were a good close range AWPer, which is a skill you usually need if you're going to win like clutches and stuff. Seemed like you fit that mold, right?
Which mold?
Being a clutch player, being someone who wins the 1v1 on LAN.
Yeah, definitely. I had my nerves always in, not almost always, I had my nerves in good check. And right. I had the mentalities like we're going to win until we lose. You know, it's like it's not over until it's over. And yeah, it's like I never gave up during the games. You know, it's like, doesn't matter how it's looking. I'm going to see however I can turn this one around and slowly just take out one person, next one, and never like let the mind play with me or feeling fair or like, oh man, I'm going to lose this. How am I going to do this? Like, I didn't allow the stories to come in. It's just full focus, like predator mindset, you know, it's sure. Like there's no space for stories to come in and thoughts to come in that hinders your performance.
While you were in this team, or maybe when it started to dissolve, did you ever get any other like cool offer from another squad? Because one thing as well, people don't know is like teams back then are super ruthless. Like if SK drops off a little bit, they're going to immediately ask all the like, rival players. Like what people don't know is most of those like transfers just never happened. Behind the scenes, it was tons of invites went out to all the best players. Do you ever have like some angle you ever considered or a team you would have liked to have joined?
At that time, no, because like on the international scene, you know, it's like it's difficult to join like an American or Asian or even a South European team, like a French team. And it's like it's difficult to join all of those because the ping is so different. You know, it's like you could not practice with a team. So it was just a European, like a Nordic team that I would be able to join. And at that time, like SK was full, you know, it's like. Don't remember which other teams were around, but like there was not really any space in any team in that way for me to join, because it's all about timing also, right?
Sure.
And I was also feeling like I'm done at that time, you know. It was not until Executor, because I don't remember what happened with him. He probably is quite soon after we finished, he started up NOAH. He was one of the founders of that one, you know. It's not until he asked me like, okay, do you want to join the world's best team? I was like, okay, I can do that. It's like, and yeah, that could have been a comeback. I would have definitely continued like playing if we would have been performing better. But after that, I was so disappointed in some of the players in the team of how lack of commitment I felt during such an important tournament, you know. So it's like I was, yeah.
If people think about the different stories we've talked about in this interview, on the one hand, like you've got to live out some of like the dreams of any Swedish player, like I said, joining these big teams, winning tournaments, getting all this opportunity, the professional lifestyle. But it's the question I would have is this: since it was so short, how satisfying was it? Like on the one hand, was some of it worth it? Is there some way you sort of feel like I should have played like a year or two more, and then I would have like gotten everything I wanted to do out? Well, how do you evaluate your Counter-Strike career?
It's a good question. I think I could have given maybe one more year. You know, it's like with for example, with NOAH, if we would have like performed better that year, I would probably given it one more year with them or something like that. It would have been nice to play with Pod and Heaton and some of those players also to feel that in. But I mean, I ended up like my career after, I don't know how much you know, after I stopped competing, like first that year I was hired by QPAD.
QPAD, and
I
yeah.
Around, you know, I went to Greece, I went to Israel, I went to Portugal, France, Germany. It's like I traveled all.
Oh, right. I see what you mean. I thought you just meant you went within Sweden doing the 1v1. No, you're right around Europe and stuff, Europe, right?
Including okay. Israel. Okay. So it's like I got to travel around and experience a lot.
Sure.
And after that, I was hired by MTV, by a company to be the coach for Les Sols 2016.
Right.
So I traveled around the world in 42 days, went to, you know, where did we go? To Tokyo, to Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia.
Right.
Thailand. First like New York, LA, Las Vegas, and then Hong Kong.
Wow, okay. From the world tour then.
Kuala Lumpur, yeah. Like I went traveling all over the world. And after that, I got recruited to be the first like live studio, what do you call
some
it?
Some sort of streaming shit, right?
TV hosts for Swedish
there
television.
There we go. Oh, right.
Like they're online when they were covering covering DreamHack.
Yes.
I don't know, like maybe 2000, when was 2007, 2008, don't remember exactly the year.
It was late 2000s, yeah.
Yeah, so I was like one of the first TV hosts in this.
Right.
I had my own TV show also in 2006. That was called 1337. So I got recruited to be, it was a new channel that was starting up in Sweden for the youth. And they gave me to be the TV host for the computer and TV game show. So, I mean, I had a very interesting experience after competing, you know, doing a lot of TV stuff and traveling the whole world. So I wouldn't like that part is still what I consider part of my
career. Yes. So you got a few more years than we realize if we only saw the pro career, right?
Okay. Exactly.
Let me ask you a question about that then, because if people don't know, this is actually an angle that sadly has been really misrepresented because of like political stuff nowadays. So obviously, even today in 2022, there is still a lot of discussion about the topic of like, can women be in Counter-Strike? Or like, there's obviously like ESL has their own tournament circuit. But the thing I find really misleading is they always present it now as though it's like a new concept. Like, we're just going to now, could women ever be in Counter-Strike? And I'm always like, they've been in it for like 15 years, guys. Like, you have to understand, like when I began almost, it was only a couple of years after we had like ESWC came along famously. They always had the female tournament and then other companies got involved. So the team you're talking about, LaSalle, was one of the best female teams. As you say, they had the player Queen who used to be actually in our lag. If people don't know, she was actually in the top male part of the Swedish scene. She was a competent player.
It was good.
When you were with this team, this was when you had the big tournaments began every year. ESWC had like a championship, etc. So this was finally where like there was some money, there was some salaries. They weren't huge, of course, but some people had salaries. As you say, there was the marketing element. People got to go to different countries. What was this experience like? Because on the one hand, like you must be able to apply some of your pro knowledge because you're trying to help other people do it, but it's in a totally different side of the industry, right? Must have been a very different experience.
You mean with the with LaSalle?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I felt like it was a little weird because I was going to be, I was recruited to be there to be their coach. And then also the presenter, like, so when the camera come up and I was going to give the girls like a challenge.
All right.
But it ended up being more about creating TV, which of course that was the idea, than them actually becoming a really good team.
Right.
So it was
more about like the media angle. Right. Okay.
It was, I was barely coaching them.
Right.
In that sense. And they were also, I don't know what was up with these players and the sisters at that time, but they were also like, you know, I don't know. There was some sort of like big egos in them also. Not, they had like me coming in who had the experience that I had, and they were not picking my brain.
Right.
They were not coming for help or asking how I could guide and coach them. So it was the sense of traveling around with this team. I was also like, Why am I here? Except for like, okay, I get to travel, I get to be,
okay,
I get to get paid, but my knowledge and skills in this game was not being applied.
Right. It sounds like in general, that's one thing in esports you didn't like about this early period is like you were already trying to be like, this is a real thing. I'm like a pro. I'm trying to be the best. But a lot of other people, it's like, I always say this to fans. A lot of people who are pros just happen to be really good at a video game. They didn't set out like with a mission and a goal. Like they're just people who like their aim's really good in Counter-Strike. They can shoot the AK, you know, that type of a person. Sadly, they're not going to be super dedicated and give their whole life, right? They're just going to play for fun.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also because since I was like, I was a little few years older than many of the people.
Right, sure.
Except for Allogget, they were older, you know. But at that time, it was like, I still felt there was this immaturity and not really taking it seriously. Like, no one was fully taking it seriously. Like, they were, but not professionally enough. And that was something that I was lacking. Because I always had that, like, we want to be professional. We want to be, like, really, like, this is important, you know.
Sure.
And I felt like it was still, the scene was still young, right? I mean, when did Counter-Strike come up? Like 99, 98?
Yeah, yeah.
So this was only in the beginning area of this. So I, of course, it had some growth to do in all levels.
Sure.
I felt that. And later on, I actually, after I started studying mental training, I studied for an entire year to become a mental trainer. And then went on to study sports psychology at Stockholm University. And then my plan was actually to enter into the scene again, but more as a mental coach.
Right.
Because one thing that I've seen over and over and over in the scene was the lack of mental power, mental,
for sure.
And you know, the coping strategies, the how to set up goals, how to work with the mind, because that's what's already being applied in so many other areas when it comes to competitive sports,
yes.
But nothing in esports. And most young guys don't have the tools, you know. So it's like that was something that I was gonna bring in, but then my life turned into other things.
Sure. Let me ask you a little bit about that then. Maybe that's the last topic then, because I'm interested that that's sort of like a conclusion you took from esports. I also think quite similar, which is people don't realize, fans who look at the pro tournaments and they see a player do badly and they're like, oh, he sucks or whatever. It's like, you don't know. There, if we could take pressure away, if we could show you what it's like when the player's just at home and he's playing a practice game with none of the world watching, so many of these players are really good. Like, some of them could be like the best player in the world. But as you say, the ability to actually like mentally handle the pressure of playing the match on stage in a different location against the best team with all the people watching, those factors can totally, they can make the player half as good. He can be terrible compared to that. Like, I feel like that still is a misunderstood area. Like, people, that it's a little bit more explored. Like, some teams now obviously have like a sports psychologist or someone to help a little bit, but I feel like the players themselves, a lot of them still just think like, the flaw I see, dude, is it's almost like they think you're born with the ability to be like clutch or whatever, or you're not. They think it's like I either am or I aren't, whereas to me it's something you can work on for sure. There's techniques, right?
Yeah, definitely. In both, you know, some people have it naturally and some people who don't gets to train it. And those people who have it gets to improve it, because it's such an important part. And yes, I mean, I learned quite early on this part, because when I started studying sports psychology, I already had a lot of understanding, because I already been like, I was quite aware person of the mental aspect of the game. And I remember early on when I was still, I think, playing with Arena, I was a good friend with Legend.
Legend,
who was a team captain in Matrix.
Yes.
And I remember he told me one thing once, and that was like when I learned about visualization, how you can visualize something before it happens. And I remember he telling me such an important thing, and I used it for my entire career and even in life, you know. But he said, like, I remember Dust 2, when you go towards the stairs in Dust 2 as a terrorist, and there was normally always one or two players like being somewhere there. He said, like, before you go forward and like shoot, you visualize that he's sitting there. So you see him in your mind, he's there. And then when you go forward, you don't have to see if he's there. You know he's there. You just have to press the button. So there is no reaction, barely any reaction time, because in your mind, he's already there. You just have to plop. Meanwhile, if you don't have that mindset, you go and, oh, he's there. And then you react.
Sure.
Because in the Counter-Strike, as you know, it's milliseconds. It's like milliseconds that defines,
yes,
you know, the outcome. So I remember, like, even that was the first like sports psychology tool that I got, was the visualization part. So I used that a lot in my games. That's why I many times had an advantage over other snipers. For example, a sniper was standing waiting for me. I knew he was there. Even I didn't know, but I visualized he's there. So when I came forward, it was just about pressing the mouse.
Sure. By the way, who were the other AWPers back in your day? Who were the ones who were like impressive to you, or you thought they were really hard to play against?
Wow. That's a good question.
Because to me, like, it is the gun it's the easiest to get like overrated with. Like, someone had a good demo and they just like get all the hype from the frag movie. But the people who are actually good, the best AWPers are a class above, in my opinion, you know.
Yeah, that's good.
Because you can really dominate with that weapon on LAN if you're good.
Yeah, I remember Shagwar was
really sure. Good.
I think Method also, like, both of them were. Executor was extremely good, like, when he was also playing in the other teams. I remember Spawn.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, he was good with all the
yeah, players. True.
Fisker. He was also, like, extremely good sniper. How it's like 20 years.
It's literally 20 years.
It's so much has happened since then.
I've got some other angles I want to ask. Like, who would you say is, because you played with a lot that you could go fit this pill, who's the smartest player you played with? Who gets that title?
I would say Executor.
Okay.
Executor or Veslan, like one of them too.
Okay. Sure. What about who is the player who, like, you have to pick a teammate for this? So it's the player where if it was like, this is an imaginary scenario, obviously, someone had like a gun to your head and they're like, if he doesn't win this round, you die. Like, who would save your life? Who would be the one who you'd pick to take this round for you?
That I was used to play with, or like any player anywhere?
In theory, a teammate. I want someone who, like, you can just rely on this guy. This is the guy I'd risk my life with, this guy. Who would you pick?
I would say Executor.
He would win the 1v1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he was such a joker, you know, in that sense. He, like, you never knew with him. It's like
if people don't know, he's another person I knew. He's a very weird guy. Because on the one hand, right, he has that Vestlin thing where they love to just go super deep and really serious about tactics and what we're going to do. We've got to do this against them on this map. But on the other hand, like you say, he could be very, like, irreverent. He had a very lighthearted aspect where, like, I remember famously there was a stupid line he once said where it was something like, he said, all I know about in life is, like, Counter-Strike and things that girls don't like. Which is, like, if you know that, you know his personality, if you know what he means by that line. Like, it's a good line, by the way. Like, what a great fucking quote.
Yeah.
And that is who he is as a person, true.
Yeah, no, but when it comes to, like, in-game, I had full trust in him. That's why, like, when he asked me to come, it's like I said yes, because I trusted him.
Right.
His ability to lead a team, you know, it's like I felt he was... Yeah, he was, I don't know, it's difficult to define. Very difficult to define. But, like, when it comes to competing, full trust in his ability to never also, like, to doubt himself. He had a very strong, like, thoughts of his capacity.
All right, one last one on those, which is just this. Who is the player you played with who you think was the most underrated? Like, who never got the proper appreciation they should have?
That I played with? It's a very good question. I would say Luciano was underrated.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, Luchez also. But he definitely got some... He got
a bit when you were winning, I think. Yeah. I think when you were winning the championships, he got some shine,
yeah,
for sure.
Luciano was, for sure, he was underrated. Yeah. But I think also he was a little underrated. I don't know why. But yeah, when we lost him, it was just a big loss. You know, we would have never kicked him up at that time. So he was definitely one of the, in our team, because Vestlin was highly rated. I was highly rated. Executor was highly rated.
That was some big names for sure, yeah.
So it was Luciano who was, like, not as highly rated, I think.
Right, what's going to make this, by the way, a unique interview is, even though this is the end of the interview now in a moment, we're actually going to, and there'll be a link, skip over to my other YouTube channel, and we're going to continue talking to Quick here. But the thing is, it won't be about Counter-Strike or esports. It'll be about what he did in the rest of his life, basically. So at the end of this part of the interview, Quick, if someone's only watching from the esports side, do you have, like, a final message or something you thought about your career, or is there someone you'd like to shout out or say hello to if they're watching?
Yeah, I want to say shout out to all my former team players and all the players that were playing at that time. Thank you for, you know, being there and creating this magical, historical time that we were part of, and all the amazing games and tournaments that we played against each other and together. So, but mainly shout out to my former team players, for sure. If any of them are still listening, yeah.
This video was supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Travis Goff, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Hades, Animosity, Joseph Ginsburg, Tobias Bernasconi, Buttpounder 420, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Piercy, Tosh, Adam Ox, Toucan, and a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? You want to ask me a question at one of my monthly AMAs? Do you want teasers, find out who the upcoming guests are? Or maybe you want to take part in one of those lengthy esports discussions with moi? Well, if so, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Scrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.